A galaxy far, far away comes to Disneyland. Jackie Chan beats people up with a ladder, and we all try to pronounce Rural Juror this week in 30-2010.
30-2010, 30-2010. 3 decades, every show, sometimes associated video. 30-2010, 30-2010. Surprises are awaiting if we're going to the 80s and the 90s and 2000s.
Welcome to the first fully seven-based episode of 30-2010, your weekly look back at what happened 30 years ago, 20 years ago, and 10 years ago. That's 87, 97, and 2007. For the last 52 episodes, it was all 86, 96, and 06, which rolls right off the tongue. Seven, complicated number to say. 87, 97, 2007. I'm one of your hosts, Brett Elston.
I'm the better host, Chris Antista.
Oh, how could you?
I'm Dave Rudden, and that boy ain't right.
I'm Diana Comet Goodman.
And if you noticed, we came in with a new theme for the show, and I thought 2017, mm-hmm. brand new. It seems like any good sitcom from the 80s, mm-hmm. you got to change your theme song.
It's true, especially when you change networks. That didn't happen.
Yeah, well, we didn't change networks, but, you know, that's a good anecdote to make. But, yeah, Hot Dad did our new theme song. And part of it also was the old one was a little long, mm-hmm. And this was just a little shorter, mm-hmm. which is kind of a modern thing TV themes do, is they shorten it so it's get to the point a little
when
quicker.
When was the last time you saw Lisa leave the band room? It doesn't happen very often.
Yeah, so thank you, Hot Dad, and I'm sure
Patreon.com/hotdadsomething.
Jesus, yeah, and I'm sure you can find him on YouTube as well. Lots of good stuff there. And
Christmas song is so good.
Yes, and so I'm sure people have a lot to say about the new theme and whether it's better than the old theme, but I know it's just a different thing that we'll all get used to eventually. And this is January 6th to the 12th, 2017. But we look back at this exact week. If somehow this is your first episode, which is a good time to start because we're in a clean break with a new year. We look at the 7-day period, January 6th through the 12th. We begin in the 80s every year, or in every episode we begin in the 80s. So we begin in 1987.
Yeah.
And a fun bit of news to kick off the show. We talk about music, movies, TV, games, and occasionally we will do a little bit of news. January 9th, 1987, Star Tours officially opens in Disneyland, which began as a tie-in to the Black Hole.
Adventures in Inner Space.
Oh.
It replaced Adventures in Inner Space.
Wait, with Martin Short? No, sorry.
Well, in a way, yeah.
No, he's in. You might even still be able to find it some pavilion, some Martin Short thing about the human body. It's not the same as the movie Inner Space,
right?
And not the same as the Black Hole, the sci-fi ripoff of 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. The movie's terrible.
There was like something about that inspired. Like, we should make a ride that's like
you got
movie
this whole
attraction
place
thing.
Called Tomorrowland, which is nothing but just like expensive cotton candy and new device showcases and the Carousel of Progress.
A great 50s, 60s imagination of what the future would look like, but it's still not today in 2017.
And then they fucked it up, though.
Yeah, wow.
It doesn't. It doesn't look as cool and streamlined, and we're going to take Pan Am to the moon.
Yeah.
It used to look cooler.
But,
so I lived in L.A., very close to Disneyland, starting right around this time. So I have been on this ride a trillion times.
Who's the biggest Disney fan you know?
You.
Never been on it ever in my life. And never will now,
sadly. That's nuts.
Well, I mean, it's the same. It's just a little bit different now.
But it had a Pee Wee Herman robot that introduced you.
Yeah, I had the Pee Wee Herman robot.
I didn't write it until 2013 because again I'm nowhere near here till whatever. But that was the first time I ever went to Disneyland was 2013, and I went in with like a big chip on my shoulder. But like I guess fine. I haven't been and I really should, so we'll go. And it took me like 2 or 3 rides to get into it. But Space Mountain was the tipping point for me. I was like that ruled. That's one of the greatest things I've ever experienced in my life.
That interior in the queue is so great.
I love Space Mountain so much, but. The Disneyland one, the Disney World one, I'm not as big on. I just like the way you sit and the way you queue up. It's not as nice, but it's still a great ride. Star Tours, though, by the time I wrote it, was all prequels. Mostly all modulated. You get in this ride. It's a thing you sit in. You put 3D glasses on. You look at a screen. It shakes, and you're. It does such a. To me, I always thought of those rides as like you look at a screen and the thing you're in shakes. Like that sounds so boring.
There's 3D glasses now.
Now there's 3D glasses that you put on.
And it's
you didn't need them back in my day.
It's randomly generated now.
It's,
right?
Yeah, it's randomly generated. What segment you'll see? You might start with Darth Vader storming your ship. You might start with the probe droid, and then you get whisked off to you know, numerous locations from the original trilogy and the prequel trilogy. Mm-hmm. And I went on it so much because we got to do the Magic Hour mm-hmm. stuff. And, you know, just a point where there's no one in line. So we'll get off and go right back on. Like, what does it matter? And over the course
is, like, just different yeah. getting right back on.
Over the course of, like, two or three years, I saw, I think, every version of the ride. But mm-hmm. I don't have no idea what it was like before all this incredible projection technology and, like...
All right. Let me walk you through it. Yeah. So, I'm sure the line for the ride is still the same. I haven't been on the new version. Mm-hmm. I haven't been to Disneyland since, like, 01. Late 01, like right after 9/11. Yeah.
We had to heal.
Now there's a connection.
Yeah. But, I mean, it had nice theming as you go through the line in that, like, you're in the Star Wars universe, yeah. and this is like a bus station, and, you know, they would have little things about, like, visit Yavin, it's really nice. And
sure.
here's the thing, oh, you could go to Hoth for a ski vacation. And then, there'd be, like, a little fun robot. It would, like, talk and stuff, and C-3PO and R2-D2 are there.
It's Paul Pee-wee Rubens.
Yep. Huh. And then you would go into, you know, in these lines, you go into this room, and no 3D glasses, mm-hmm. and, you know, the whole room is on a giant jack, and it moves around. Yeah. And then, you know, the screen opens up, and it's like, hi, everybody, I'm this wacky robot. It's kind of my first day here, and we're going to go off on this thing, and then,
everything goes wrong.
Yep, pretty much. And then, like, it fucks up, and you end up, like, crashing through the space station, and then you almost hit a thing, and then they're like, okay, light speed, and then, like, you feel, like, force pushing back on you, and I think you're going to Endor. You overshoot it, and then you end up, like, with the Death Star and a trench run. You go through a comet, and then you end up back where you started and almost blow up.
That's pretty much how it works now.
I wish I could punch my parents in the... I lived in Florida. They took my sister to this twice, and not me. Disney, big Disney Star Wars fan.
How good of a kid were you?
I was a bad kid. They seemingly did it on purpose. I got sent to a retreat camp to learn how to behave better. They took my sister to MGM Studios. That did happen.
Oh, yeah. Boy.
Now, what's really fun is sometimes, because they're in, like, a room and it's closed off and you're waiting in line, there have been times if you're, like, really nice to the person who's, like, the worker who's standing there, there's cameras and they'll turn them on. And it looks ridiculous because it's a bunch of people just going, crazy in their chairs. And you're like, that can't be any fun. Your chair's just vibrating. Yeah. Good fucking deal. Yeah. But no, it really does feel like you're moving.
It works really well. Cool. Like, when I went in, I was like, oh, gosh, it's one of those rides you just sit still and shit shakes around. Oh, boy. Mm-hmm. But Disney engineers the hell out of these things to be like, we're going to make this as immersive as this technology could ever possibly be.
Yep.
We will spend the maximum amount of money to make that happen.
For
and they
Disney's,
did.
It was rudimentary.
Yeah.
It's like those things you see them at fairgrounds. You get inside this nose of a monorail, which allegedly I've heard is where, like, some of those rides go to die. You can ride some old Universal Fantastic World of Hanna-Barbera, maybe Disney's Body Wars for you Epcot fans.
But this cost $32 million in 87, which apparently is, according to the wiki, is twice what the park cost to start
adjusted for
in 1955. But there is an actual 1987 commercial here I found on YouTube.
Now, in a kingdom very, very near...
R2, do hurry. The passengers are boarding.
Prepare yourselves.
Welcome aboard.
For the ultimate Disneyland thrill attraction from the imagination of Disney and George Lucas. Because now, the adventure is real. Star Tours at Disneyland. In all the universe, there is no greater thrill. Now open at Disneyland.
Ugh. Man.
So lucky, all of you.
If you wonder why Disney owns Star Wars, they basically did from the beginning.
I sadly did an entire video about in-game versions of Tomorrowland.
Yeah.
And Kinect Adventures, which was released, I don't know, how long ago would you say, Dave?
3-4 years ago?
Kinect came out in 2011, so...
It would have been like 2012, 2013, and Disney bought Star Wars in like 2012, 2013? Forget what happened.
12,
but it's like a 1-1 recreation of... Tomorrowland, but since Star Wars was not yet Disney's, it is shuttered, empty, a giant obelisk of nothing.
Wow!
And it's just like, man, if you would have waited like 2 months, you could have just slapped a Star Wars PNG right on that thing.
Yep,
such a bummer. That's the closest I've gotten to it.
Jesus,
no, I've also never been.
Well,
I have ridden two versions. They were identical, but one was in French.
Oh, and
I did it at Euro Disney. Disneyland Paris.
Who are you to resist, huh?
But it was great because I've been on this ride so many times that I know the whole spiel, and then to just hear it in French and be like, yep, no, it's De Comet!
I find it both an incredible bummer and a massive joy when I talk about theme parks. We do a lot of nostalgic-based stuff on the Lasertime Network, but that's something sometimes you will never be able to recreate. You can't get back a ride that's gone. And
which is why we got to go say goodbye to Tower of Terror.
Twilight Zone Tower of Terror.
It's about to become the... As much as I love Guardians of the Galaxy, I feel like it's...
When mystery gave way to a loud raccoon.
I did, like... I had delusions that I'm going to go to Universal Studios Japan because I've been on Back to the Future ride, but I was just like... One more time, got to do it. I'm going to go all the way to Japan, and I think it's not even there anymore now.
I think it might not, but it's stuck around for a real long time, because that's The Simpsons now in America. But from what I believe, I think Star Tours is kind of an enhanced version of Back to the Future, the ride.
Yeah.
No dome, though.
Yeah.
Movies this week, again, January 6th to the 12th, 1987. Golden Child is still number one. It's been there for a couple of weeks. We've brought it up a few times. It became one of the highest grossing movies of 86. It didn't beat out... Voyage Home, Star Trek, and obviously last year the biggest movie was Top Gun. Crocodile Dundee, number two. But we're in a new year, and it gets to a slow start with one of the most like quintessential 80s things of all time, a Charles Bronson movie.
Charles Bronson.
Where he kills people who have it coming to him. It's called Assassination.
Protecting the highest office in the land demands the toughest man in the business.
Thanks for coming back for Inauguration Day. But you're not getting the president to protect.
Oh?
You get one mama.
The first lady? I've been reading and hearing about her.
She's a very difficult woman and a bad influence on the president.
This movie is Listen, Lady, the movie where, like...
You're gonna miss the hell out of Nancy Reagan.
It's not safe to sit up that high. If you don't get down, I'll have to pull you down.
So she sits up higher in the car, like, don't tell me what to do. And then immediately Uzis come out from every crack on Earth and shoot at them.
Save me, Charles Bronson!
Yeah.
You wanted the added weird thing? First lady there is Jill Ireland. That's Mrs. Bronson.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And then we jump to the end. What do you think the twist of this movie is? Who do you think's after the first lady?
President.
The vice president.
You've been reporting our whereabouts to the president?
Charles Bronson.
Has it ever occurred to you that the president might be the one who wants you dead?
Jill Ireland.
Cow would never hurt me.
Yes, he would. But it's a Canon Films joint, as you might suspect.
Kind of ruled the 1986 portion of the movies.
Canon Films, protecting the First Lady.
Again, watch Electric Boogaloo, it's wonderful.
Yep. That's really the only movie mentioned this early period of January in 1987.
It's historically a dumping ground and still is for things that no one has any faith in or can't really fit into a more popular...
And I feel
like
this is part of why... Well, this isn't really related at all, I guess. But, like, sometimes big games would come out in January, and it feels counterintuitive to launch a new big new video game right after Christmas.
Yeah.
But it's like, well, if the movies are dumping grounds, put out a big game.
Yeah.
Like, it's only, at the time, $40-$50 for a new game.
Yeah.
And Capcom, for years, would hold, like...
Yep,
I mean, Resident Evil 7 is coming out in January in 2017.
But like Dark Void did.
Well,
I don't know why that comes to mind.
Yeah.
Street Fighter...
But, like, you know, Street Fighter was, like, late February, early March. But, like, DMC, RE4, Lost Planet, which we're going to talk about in this episode.
Whoa!
Big January releases. They purposely... Bayonetta back in the day... Wow, it was Bayonetta back in the day.
I would say like gift cards, but that I mean.
But yeah, that's really it for movies. TV this week.
Oh man, so TV is back, but I sent this to Pattern. A lot of clip shows. So it's kind of like you're back from vacation, but you're still like only doing a half day or whatever.
Can I just ask one? Can you remember the last show, modern show you saw with a clip show? Does that... In a YouTube era, that cannot happen. It's almost offensive for someone to string
together. I think
I have
the Clerks one, but that one was just as
it was
a joke. Yeah.
I feel like so many shows now are like, look, we're just doing 13.
Yeah.
Or we're just not going to air a new episode.
I think that's how it should be.
Yeah.
That makes so much more sense.
So the first one I'm going to talk about is the most cliche clip show, everything about it. So who's the boss? The name of the episode is The Way We Was.
That's a Simpsons.
Hey, Simpsons ripped them off. And the family reminisces about what they were doing before they all got together during a snowstorm. A snowstorm.
That's all clip shows they have. It's a bottle episode. Yeah. It's always they get locked somewhere, and then they have to reminisce about somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. Samantha wanted to go to a party, but now she's got to talk about when she went.
Do you remember Samantha? When
I don't. I've never seen an episode of the show. I saw one episode of the show where he hit an awesome pool shot. Yeah. That's it.
I watched a lot of it. Don't remember anything. But
this
he was
the first time I ever said after a girl's name, Samantha, Mona.
Excuse me, it's Angela.
Angela.
He was good. He cameoed in Broad City this year last year. He was pretty good in that. Mm-hmm.
A much better clip show, at least in concept. And you brought up like how many weird experimental episodes this show did.
Moonlighting
aired an episode called The Straight Poop.
It's got poop in it.
But the theme of the episode is a newscaster is investigating why they didn't have a new episode this week.
Oh, wow. I remember that.
Yeah.
I did not bring that up because I just keep bringing up only the weird episodes. I feel bad about it, but yeah, I remember. Is it Rona Barrett?
I think so. It's in the clip.
Yeah, so it's an actual celebrity interviewer going to talk to the characters, treating them like they're real people.
But it's also
They're also on TV, and they know they're on TV, and they know their adventures have been on TV.
And it's breaking the fourth wall a little bit with like some of the references.
And it's a clip.
No new episode again, and America wants to know why. So I've come here to the home of the Blue Moon Detective Agency to speak with the players themselves, Maddie Hayes, David Addison, their friends, their colleagues, their lovers. Who are these two people? What makes them tick? And what went wrong? What about the rumors? Is there friction? Or are Time Magazine, USA Today, The National Enquirer, and Star just misinformed?
You loop in Star and The Enquirer with USA Today and Time?
It's pretty clever.
They mentioned the friction, and then, like, the end of the episode is Maddie and David saying, like, don't worry, we'll be back next week. And literally the next episode does not feature them. It's like all of the like below them people on the show, like Booger and I forget who else.
And the rest.
Yeah, they constantly were missing deadlines on that show. And so, that's the joke. Another new episode, another rerun, no new episode. Because you never quite knew if they were going to make the deadline that week. And, you know, things would go slow behind the scenes. And then there was the fights and the buzz and no one's getting along. And so, their schedule just went crazy. Mm-hmm. That's so weird, though. I remember the Rona Barrett being there. Bleh.
So I don't think this was a clip show. I didn't research it heavily enough, and I'm not sure if this is when it stuck. But the Cheers episode of Malone versus Chambers is where Sam proposed to Diane, and she said yes. I don't know if she like recanted this one. Mm-hmm. It's just the most convoluted sequence of events that led to the proposal. So I'm going to read. This is the Wikipedia synopsis. Sam tells Diane about a dream where he was put to death for murdering her. she reminds him that the death penalty is unconstitutional in Massachusetts. So he chases her around, and she falls, presses assault and battery charges. At the courtroom, Diane tells them about the relationship and admits that she tripped and fell while Sam was chasing her. Sam's attorney suggests that Sam propose to Diana again. The judge agrees. Sam proposes twice in court. Diana says okay to keep him out of jail. after the case is dismissed, Diane takes off the brace and packs up the cane. They apologize to each other, agreeing to be engaged.
This sounds like a wonderful lesson.
Yeah. And also, where's the bar in all this?
I don't know. We're talking about Becker?
Yeah. Oh. This is. I wonder, this kind of seems like the genesis of losing a case and becoming someone's butler.
So he tries to chase her. He's chasing
her around because
the death penalty is unconstitutional.
I don't. Yeah, that's a weird leap of logic.
I'll get you.
Scooby-Doo music kicks in. They just run from door to door.
I thought this show was good.
Nah,
it is.
It's better than most other things in '87.
This sounds like nonsense.
There is the small chance that this was like Wikipedia vandalism, and I just read verbatim. I hope not. But
prove us wrong.
I didn't think Sonic married Robotnik in this episode.
I don't recall this one in particular.
Me neither.
But okay.
Wow. What?
So that's it for TV. And also, Malone versus Chambers is my MVC.
Good. Marvel vs. Capcom. speaking of games, thanks Dave for that segue. there's not much going on in video games, but I looked up, for whatever reason, Gauntlet for the NES is listed as January. Or at least 87, and the only time I can see a month. It lists January, which seems strange given the time frame here because a lot of other important games aren't out yet. And but given that there's nothing else to talk about for video games in this particular date range, this is a good time as any, I guess, if Gauntlet did in fact somehow... That timeline doesn't make sense to me, but...
We can talk about Tengen.
Tengen, which is... If you remember Atari, and the whole story of Atari and like...
Imploding,
and there's not a lot of quality control, tons of crappy games flood the market, and you fill them up with bargain bins, and video games kind of played out as a fad, and then that whole industry kind of collapses, and Nintendo in 85, 86 is able to get it back in stores because the Famicom was going so well in Japan, they're like, well, we got to make money on this in the U.S., surely it'll work. Kind of sneak it in as a toy with the robot Rob and the Zapper and to trick people like, no, this isn't like that other thing. So Nintendo is very, very restrictive in the U.S. to a fault. And I would very much encourage anyone listening to this and you haven't read the book Game Over, read the book. Because it's one of the... And this book's almost 20 years old at this point. It might be at this point. I forget when the original publishing date is. But to have this kind of thorough accounting of Nintendo's history before wikis and before... To have an actual historical document about... what Nintendo was doing in the 80s and 90s, like, that's really cool to have. How the PlayStation comes to be, like, this is a real neat history to read. But Tengen is an offshoot of Atari, both of them being names that refer back to the game Go. So Tengen, the board game.
Oh, okay.
Go, the board for Go. Atari is, like, when you win. And I forget what all the wing. But Tengen is just, like, an obvious, like, wink, wink. So, but some of Nintendo's strict stuff is... You can only have so many. You can only release so many games a year, so you got to make them count. You can't just pump a bunch of games out. They have to be 2 to 3 or whatever.
Famously, Ninja Turtles released under the name Ultra instead of Konami because Konami couldn't release. Is that its quota for games?
Yes.
That year.
So Tengen wanted to negotiate a better deal. They wanted to release more games. So yes, Konami when they couldn't, they already put out so many games. So Metal Gear, Ninja Turtles, Base Wars, they all say Ultra instead of Konami because they made up a fake company. And somehow Nintendo's like, sure, fine, whatever.
Those are the rules. We must abide by them.
Yeah, you got us good. But it was also a lot of censorship about like religious things or references to death. I mean, this would come up more in the late 80s. But basically, Tengen and Nintendo would argue in court until like 94. And Tengen, part of the reason they're there is they're like, well, screw you. We'll do whatever we want. We know how to reverse engineer this lockout chip you guys have, and we will make unlicensed carts that don't look like classic NES carts.
Kid who had the NES, the ones that were black and triangular at the base handle, the non-chip end.
I mean, and there's numerous unlicensed. There's Color Dreams. There's all kinds of... There's blue carts. There's weird gold ones. But these Tengen carts, there's like... numerous
the
games
most pervasive
and they're usually ports of Sega or Atari, like Pac-Mania, Shinobi, Tubin, Gauntlet. These are all Tengen games that would run on your NES, but they weren't licensed.
We just talked about this on Retronauts, a really cool retro game podcast if you're into that kind of thing. The Hanna-Barbera Christmas special, Christmas Comes to Pac-Land, on the non-licensed NES version of Pac-Man, the cover art is the Hanna-Barbera Pac-Man for some weird reason.
It's also like this, imagine Atari coming to Nintendo, more or less Atari, saying, hey, let us make more stuff, and it's like, you're part of the reason it was so hard to get anyone to buy games again.
You're part
of the
reason why you had to create a seal of quality or quality control, which is, if you've ever wondered why the iPhone is so shitty with games, because there's no quality control. You either follow the rules and gouge those kids for whatever kind of in-game currency you want.
It's ironic because all these games were really good.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. Like,
was it RBI?
RBI is real great.
Yeah, and the Tengen games were all reasonably good. Like, the fact that Shinobi, a Sega property, was on the NES...
It's so weird.
...blew my mind as like a 10-year-old. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
9-year-old, I guess. But apparently, like, Gauntlet is listed as coming out in January, and I'm like, that doesn't make any sense to me timeline-wise, but hey, why not? We didn't have anything else to talk about.
Yeah.
So, but again, game over... And there's a newer version, which is also damn near 15, 20 years old, called Game Over for Start to Continue, with additional chapters about some of the early 90s things that went on. But I can't... if you are interested in video game history at all, because it's not really like, and here's some nerdy things for you if you like video games. Like, no, if you like history about entertainment, just what some of these companies that you... like someone writing a book about, like, Disney, like, a family-facing company, but, like, behind the scenes, all the, like keeping Mickey out of public domain, like all these things that these companies do that look super happy and friendly, but it's like, No, they made people so mad at them mm-hmm. that when Sony showed up with their own console, everyone was like, oh, eject. We're leaving Nintendo mm-hmm. as fast as we can. They have been such assholes to us. Blah, blah, blah. Great book. Music this week, 1987. Walk Like an Egyptian is still number one.
Hey!
Wow.
But out this week is The House of Blue Light from Deep Purple. Regarded as an album, I was reading like a quote. I forget who it was. Someone from the band, I'm assuming. They refer to it as like an album where like everyone is doing good work, everyone put in their time, and everyone was, you know, engaged. But it's just one of those things where it is not gelling. Like the sound does not come together, the album doesn't come together. But here's, you know, another Deep Purple album. And I don't know, and I don't know much about them as a band, but I know they were metal or like maybe proggy that went metal or.
They walk a line there, I guess. Their Live in Japan album is fucking awesome. Where it's just hard guitar rock. It's awesome.
They were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2016. Yep. Just last year while we were recording our show. But
Smoke on the Water, that's them?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everybody knows that. It's everyone's first guitar chord.
Yeah. But we'll go out with Call of the Wild, which is not the new Zelda game. It's Breath of the Wild, people. Call of the Wild, which is a single released around this time for this album, Blue Light. When we come back, this week in 1997.
You like Laser Time shows? Then you might like Bonus Time, Laser Time's weekly bonus show exclusively on patreon.com/lasertime. Here's a taste of what you've been missing.
Well, something we didn't talk about on Laser Time was New Year's.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we did a big karaoke all the way through midnight.
Yeah.
Ken and I really kill paper cut every time. Mm. I'm so
kill
pleased.
Paper cut? He just looked exhausted.
Some 41?
Every time. No, we did do Fat Lip, though.
Okay.
God, that was hard.
You guys walked in right as we started.
I know. I think I grabbed the mic. No, that wasn't
it was me and Pat had the mics.
I don't know any of this song.
Because it came
we
up,
like having fun at other people's expense. And
yeah. And the only reason is, like, I don't like the song.
Suck on my fat turds.
Yeah. It's not a good song. And I don't like the mentality of that song. It's such a whiny brat song.
It's such a, like, wise beyond
before
their years.
Before white boys are going to mess up your shit. Up your shit.
But just, like, how, like, if I was right now at this age writing a comic about children, that's how they're speaking about themselves.
Yeah.
We love to mess stuff up, dude.
Yeah, and it's like, you guys, the 90s already happened. I'm sorry, you're too late.
So there's a reference for no one, but they are the River Bottom Nightmare Band of the Emmett Otter Jug Band Christmas, where they sing about how bad they are.
We don't brush our teeth to help us stay mean.
Yeah.
Get Bonus Time, Laser Time's weekly, full-length, uncensored, and ad-free Patreon-exclusive podcast, as well as weekly full-length movie commentaries, wrestling and cartoon video commentaries, physical rewards, the first season of Talking Simpson, and more at patreon.com/lasertime, starting at just $5. You'll help us live, and we'll do our best to help you never be bored again. Diane is frowning. Like, actively frowning.
This song smells like a drug rug that got bong water spilled on it. Right now, I am in a dorm room of some friend of a friend, and I don't want to be there.
Oh, wow, yeah, that really sets a picture.
Yeah.
This is Incubus, Take Me to Your Leader.
That's why. I hate Incubus.
This is from their album Enjoy Incubus, Chris.
No.
An EP that was the band's first major label release on Epic Immortal.
And before they added a DJ and shit got real good.
It's the only one, apparently, with the parental advisory on it.
That's
edgy. I think this is older existing songs that they re-recorded now that they have money.
Yeah.
We're coming in with Take Me to Your Leader, which is on this album, and they would get bigger, 99, 2000, with all the other songs that we'll get to eventually. I did like Wish You Were Here, but it's, you know, it's good in a, like, well, yeah, you wrote a song that has is formulaic as shit, but you did a good job writing a formulaic hit song. Good job. Mm-hmm. Movies this week. Oh boy.
What? Is it a lot? I can't even see. I can't even
no,
see. Right
it's
now.
Just man, you got we'll start. Well, I'll play the trailer. I'll play the trailer of this first movie.
33% Homo sapien.
Pardon? What are you talking about?
Gradual extinction of the human race.
Noise. Oh my God, no! A monkey sound in there?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You can't. They don't want to show anything.
Will they say the name? We're not in the '80s anymore, so they tend not to do that. No. We're too cool for that.
Nope. Did they yell out Tom Sizemore's name as its most famous actor? Jesus Christ.
This is The Relic.
Oh, you got no love for Penelope Ann Miller?
Penelope Ann Miller. She is the main character in the film.
Disappeared.
But,
she used to be in everything.
I ran this by because I have a wonderful relationship with this film. Saw it opening weekend.
Wow.
And I'm going to say something that I hope no one finds insensitive because I had a great time with it. Because I don't like to rely on stereotypes to make jokes. I'm just part of the anecdote. I have always heard that black people talk in movie theaters. Mm. I grew up in the South, never really thought that to be the case, except this time. Mm. And it enhanced the movie 1 billion. the movie was so boring and dark.
Yelling advice. Because that's when it gets good. If people are just talking, it sucks. But if they're like, girl, don't go in there.
It's been 20 years, and I can still make my friend laugh. If you watch that trailer, a guard goes in the bathroom, lights up a joint, and everybody's real quiet, and somebody just goes, yeah, I smoke that shit sometimes. And like, just everybody went fucking nuts. And like, it just didn't stop after that. It was so awesome. And the movie sucks so bad, but it's one of the best experiences I've ever had in my entire life.
That's what happened with I Still Know What You Did Last Summer.
You did it?
It's just like, this movie's stupid.
Yeah.
But every time Brandy takes her pants off, a guy next to me jumps out of his seat and acts like he's looking to the horizon.
Yeah.
This is what you should do.
I've been to a billion different kinds of movies on the opening night. I've never found that to be the case, but I think we were all so fucking bored by this bad movie that we all forgot about that, like, the whole audience made it better for everybody. Yeah. It was so cool.
Yep. But it's a monster that
it is a complicated relationship. It's based on a novel by some guy I can't remember, but it's set in the New York.
I read that shit sometimes.
it's set in a New York at a New York museum, and they refuse to let them film there because the museum employees are portrayed pretty terribly because it's about a relic that comes to life in a museum and just wreaks havoc in a museum. So from my perspective, as a 16-year-old, it looked boring as shit. It all takes place inside a stupid, dark museum at night. And then it's this monster you can barely see that's barely on screen. And Tom Sizemore is the only one I recognize. Sorry, Pam. Penelope Ann Miller, we'll call her.
This mimic...
Yes.
Species just kind of all blur together in my head.
Mimic definitely blur together. Yeah. Oh, they're really dark and there's some sort of monster you can barely see?
If I'm not mistaken, Mimic might be next month, unless it was last year.
It's better than this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
For what it's worth.
This is real bad, like not worth revisiting at all. And a lot of these movies we'll talk about now, for some reason, after 96, will generate trilogies on straight to DVD, straight to video formats, and The Relic might be one of them.
We have already given this movie too much credit.
Yeah. Don't be mad at me. I'm sorry. I love that story. It's like I'm going at Christmas or next time I go back for Christmas. We will joke. We will just relive it. Like, yeah, that was like the funniest time we've ever. It was so funny.
Also about this week, a movie, Turbulence.
Let's delay our flight.
What's that, babe?
I meant to introduce this as the most 90s trailer of all time.
Wow, already with the whites, the more human than human.
I think I remember.
Situation like this. I don't think there's ever been a situation like this.
I'm 35,000 feet in the air, and I'm smarter than you!
Who is actually flying the aircraft?
Can you survive?
More Pan Am than a Pan Am.
The ride. Right.
Now, if you saw the poster for this movie, you would assume, due to the giant letters, it's called Can You Survive the Ride? Because that is towering over the tiny little tape that says Turbulence on it. But this also spawned a straight-to-DVD trilogy.
Jesus.
Not featuring Lauren Holly or Ray Liotta, who are the stars of this film. Which I remember the marketing, other than that, that they were deliberately spitting in the face of Speed. Like, Speed is for gay babies. You gotta see Turbulence. It's
cars and boats, boo. Planes,
baby.
Yay.
One plane the whole time. We're gonna stay there. There's a... I think it had one or two cool sequences of it's Lauren Holly trying to land the plane,
right?
And she kind of misses and has to go back up, and the guy's like, "Well, we'd better just shoot her down. I don't think we want to take the risk."
I just love in the trailer the mass shots of like, and I can't believe this happens in the movie. It's just probably, you know, editing for the trailer, but there's this a 1 second shot of 747 completely upside down.
Yeah.
And I'm like, if you got that far,
and just
I don't know if you're gonna land that plane, man.
It does. It takes place on Christmas Eve, and just that the interior.
So we got some Die Hard 2 going.
Well, the interior of the plane is dressed in like holly and shit, and like,
come on, it's a pre 9/11 world.
Flying was a dignified event.
That's right.
There's a Christmas tree on this
anybody
plane.
Anybody thought to strangle a pilot with tinsel?
Yeah.
But Ray Liotta is a man charged with murder being brought back in a plane. A fight escalates between him and
John
the U.S.
Turbulence.
Marshals. As far back as I can remember, I wanted to be arrested. And then get in a confrontation with U.S. Marshals and accidentally shoot the pilot, creating chaos and making stewardess Lauren Holly land the plane. And I think I've talked up this movie more than I think anybody in the last 10 years. Yeah. I've done my job. I don't see Turbulence.
But not this week. It's a great, great film starring in a treasure to the world.
The Cold War is over, but a new battle has begun. A terrorist regime.
He's now the head of the new Russian mafia.
Has stolen the technology.
All units stand by. The enemy has arrived.
To start a nuclear war. And there is only one weapon. Powerful enough to stop it.
Jackie Chan, First Strike.
Yeah.
First Strike.
But yeah, then I'll skip to this other line, which is like needlessly like get people in the theaters kind of rationale.
Now Jackie Chan fights for America. For the first time. Biggest action movie ever.
This
what does that mean? It's an American production, or
no,
story wise?
No, not at all.
They just dubbed it.
This is a conceit to go like, he's fighting for America. So then that's it.
I suddenly don't hate him anymore.
But this was Police Story 4.
Oh, yeah.
Everywhere else, but released here, came out, you know, last year in Hong Kong. Everywhere else, Jackie Chan's biggest movie in Hong Kong at the time, maybe to this day, and one of his highest grossing films, and one of the highest grossing films in Hong Kong of all time.
Wow.
Great stunts,
yeah.
Great, you know, skiing stunts. There's stuff with like a aquarium, and it really boils down to he puts on the yellow the suit. An homage to Bruce Lee, and does the craziest shit with a ladder you'll ever see a human being do.
Oh my god, that ladder scene's amazing.
One of the coolest fight scenes of all time.
Wow.
I don't remember. I don't know why I always thought this was from a different movie, but I realized because they're fighting Russians and they're skiing, that there's the gag where he's wearing like a little fluffy seal hat that looks like a stuffed animal seal.
Yes.
And he's running around. I don't know why, but I just lost it watching that. It's the dumbest gag ever.
Because it might be that or Operation Condor. I can't remember.
They blur together for me, but it doesn't mean Jackie Chan's not one of the most talented on-screen performers that has ever lived.
Because like I saw Rumble in the Bronx in the theater. Mm-hmm. I saw First Strike, Operation Condor, Mr. Super Nice Guy.
Super Cop.
I missed Super Cop in theater somehow. I saw it later, but...
So good.
It's so good.
Yep.
But one of the reviewers from the San Francisco, I'm guessing Chronicle, Examiner, this review, which is totally true. One of the pleasures of being alive at this period in history is Jackie Chan. There are other pleasures, of course, and other movie pleasures, too. But in few things in film today are as reliable as a Jackie Chan movie. Even if the picture is weak, Chan is never disappointing. Watching him in Jackie Chan's First Strike, a brand new effort opening today, there's no doubt that this is a lovable original and a great popular artist. So this time Chan swims with sharks. He climbs from balcony to balcony on top floor of a hotel building. He even drops 100 feet from a helicopter into a frozen lake as the helicopter explodes.
And you know that lake is really frozen!
And again, we did an article on LaserTimePodcast.com about our favorite Jackie Chan moments when Rumble in the Bronx turned 20. Mm-hmm. And this fight scene from First Strike is one of the so cool, like he's just fighting people off with a ladder
and he's, you know, diving through the ladder, which not a problem.
Yep.
It's so amazing.
So
honorary
good.
Oscar this year. He fucking deserved it.
Yep. And I read the book, his
biography,
autobiography. Mm-hmm. I always forget which one is
did
which.
Did he write it?
I think so. I'm sure he had help, but I'm sure someone helped him. But his story of just how he like got the name Jackie and how he trained and like I don't know, he has an incredible life, and he totally deserves that Oscar. Just for entertaining the shit out of everybody.
Breaking every bone for us.
Yes.
The pull quote on the movie poster is in all red letters, all caps, action delirium.
It's just so much fun. Again, these movies are so good.
Let's celebrate 100 years of Chan.
Yes. TV this week, 1997.
Following up on last week's cliffhanger, Matt Lauer replaced Brian Gumbel on the TNA show.
Wow.
I never realized their histories were tied together.
Yeah.
Also, because I've never seen those shows, mm-hmm. but when they cameo on SNL and Conan, I know who they are now.
Well, speaking of shows that nobody watched, January 6, 1997... Sunset Beach debuted. It was an Aaron Spelling soap opera about families who lived in Orange County.
Yeah.
Ran for 750 episodes.
On USA?
What?
Did it have Josh Brolin in it?
These are all good questions. But let's move on to the next day. January 7th, 1997. Fox airs Vanishing Point, which was a remake of the...
James Taylor movie.
Yeah.
James Taylor's in it. It's not a James...
But in this
no,
one...
No, it's Tulane
Blacktop.
Yeah. No, that movie's real good, though. I love Vanishing Point.
Yeah, I like both of them.
The plot synopsis is that an expectant father, played by Viggo Mortensen, speeds a muscle car across four states... guided by an Indian spiritualist. I'm really angry I couldn't find any clips of this because it just sounds amazing to me.
But yeah, the idea that Fox original. Would remake Vanishing Point.
That's a weird thing for
Well, because Vanishing Point, if you look at it now, it's beautiful, but it's clearly like, man, there might be 10 guys on set and two actors on screen at like every moment in that film.
Yeah.
Yep. You might remember the car from Death Proof.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They make a big point of, it's a Vanishing Point car!
With like a woman... it's probably got the most prolonged naked woman on a motorcycle sequence.
What's number two?
let me do some Googling.
Wow, that splash image for Sunset Beach. Three shirtless men.
Ooh. That's pretty great. I think we found our image.
Mama-like.
January 11th, 1997, Kevin Spacey hosts Saturday Night Live. Mm. But more importantly, Monty Python cast members Michael Palin and John Cleese cameo.
This was so painful.
Yeah, it really was.
Yeah. I watched
but
this.
But at the time, I didn't know what they were doing.
Bet. You okay, so I...
And then the audience didn't either. The audience didn't know.
This whole episode, though, I remember there was like one point where I was like, wait... Is this the joke of this sketch?
They redid the Dead Parrot skit, I remember.
Yeah, the whole episode is bad, but they redid Dead Parrot. They did it really slow.
This parrot has ceased to be!
They did it. It seemed like it was at like 2/3 speed. They were going really slow, and there were lots of pauses, and nobody was laughing.
Yeah, the audience didn't know what they were doing. It just looked like... Who are these people, and why are they performing what feels like a 30-year-old sketch? Because it's exactly what they were doing. And I hadn't seen Monty Python at that point.
Wow.
Like it was. Remember that they had that like 45 disc DVD box set that was $250 for fucking years.
It was advertised on TV for like years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But they did start off the show with something more contemporary. Mm-hmm. Actually, talking about a thing we just discussed last week. If you want to hand over the cable, I can play it.
And I'm John Cleese. The television industry this week has introduced a new system for rating television programs with this little bugger up here. Now, tonight, Michael and I have been asked to explain the new rating system for Saturday Night Live so that parents may determine what their children should watch.
So,
which we talked about last episode was the rating system.
But weird that two British comedians are describing the American rating system. And
I'm trying to think if they were there promoting something. Was Fierce Creatures
I was
Creatures
about
out?
To say we got Fierce Creatures in a couple weeks.
Ah, that must have been
howdy.
Yeah, the unfortunate fish called Wanda. Not a remake. Very same writers and cast.
It's a follow-up. It's not a sequel.
Not a sequel.
It's got some really good parts in it.
Fish
Called Wanda being
fish called Wanda
one of my favorite
so great.
Movies ever. So.
It's a snake's revenge to the original Metal Gear.
But this is a real Monkey's Paw of an episode. Wouldn't it be great if Monty Python was on SNL? No, not really.
No.
They're
it's
much different
really
kinds of
sad.
Comedy.
Yeah.
But speaking of my kind of comedy, the very next day, January 12th, 1997, King of the Hill debuts.
This is what's so great that Dave discovered and passed along to me. Perhaps the quote I make all the time and the thing that's been memed the most this is the first line of King of the Hill after the cold open and the credits. This is the first line.
What you listening to, son?
I don't think you like it.
Well, why not? I like this new generation of music.
Hello?
Mother of God, it's all toilet sounds. Where did you record this?
I bought it at the mall. It's the Funny Phone Jerks.
Let me tell you, Bobby, there's nothing funny about these sounds. What that person on your tape has is a medical disorder. Now you get ready for the game, okay?
Yes, sir.
That boy ain't right.
Yeah, there you go. It's so weird that all that happened right away.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen the meme, it's people take out the jerky phone caller sound and put in whatever song they hate, and Henry, and Hank Hill will just react. I didn't even notice until we look at it again that he blushes in a way that he doesn't really ever do again in the series, but it just... I love Hank Hill as a character. Yeah. He could have been this giant caricature of a Southern Texan rural people, but is this really affectionate portrayal of just a guy trying to do the right thing all the time. And he's embarrassed by this. Mm-hmm. He's embarrassed by fart noises. It's not that he hates it.
Yeah, no, it was a show, like, at first I was like, this isn't The Simpsons, and was like boo-hiss about it, but then...
And the pilot's real ugly.
And as time went on, I was like, no, I like this because it does show, like, I'm not from Texas, but, like, and Texas is different from the South, and Texas is not the Midwest. Texas is kind of Texas, but it's still that type of person that I grew up around and my family has. Just showing them, like, they might occasionally say something insensitive, but they'll just apologize for it. Like, I don't know, man. I was ignorant.
You're right. He's constant compromises.
Yeah, they'll show him compromising.
Exactly. He's very well-meaning.
Yeah, all the time.
That's like his defining trait. And even though he's got a dog named Ladybird, he doesn't like things changing much and all that sort of thing. He's not angry.
He's not racist.
He's not angry about things changing. He's just sort of like, whatever.
This is about the most, not that he could be, because he's telling Bobby, let's go to the game. What do you know about Bobby Hill now? Dad, I love football. No, Bobby wants to be a cheerleader. Yeah. I don't know if that happens in this episode.
Well, so the plot of this episode is that Hank Hill is accused of beating Bobby because Bobby gets hit with a baseball at the baseball game. And later on, Hank yells at a Megalomart employee because he doesn't know where the WD-40 is. Also, to set the canon for the entire series, Luann moves in.
When he says that boy ain't right, he walks into Luann in the shower. It's just I can't believe how much of this was present from the first second.
Like the cold open they speak of, it's exactly how it ends too, where it's just the four Hank and his three friends standing together right in front of the house. Yep,
Dale
and
Bill.
It's funny because they talk about a bunch of things. What they end on is like, did you see that episode of Seinfeld? New York. And then they say, show about nothing. And it's like, this was the animated series that didn't need to be animated. Yeah, 99% of what happens in the show is completely plain and doesn't need animation to...
One of my favorite episodes is when Hank Hill learns about sexual harassment by being raped by a dolphin. And it's so great.
But it just sets up so much of the canon of the show right away.
It does.
The narrow urethra, Peggy Hill being a terrible Spanish teacher.
Yeah.
Substitute teacher. Spanish teacher.
What a great show.
Yeah, it's a show that over time grew into something, more thoughtful than you would think you were going to get about a show. A guy who sells propane accessories.
Propane accessories. It's one of those, I turn on the TV and it just happens to be on.
I'm watching it.
I'm just watching it, and I don't think I've ever watched one where it's like, I didn't even smile.
Yeah.
There's always something in there that makes me go, oh, that was cute.
Yeah, it's also...
Oh, that was funny.
The grandpa from Laos, walks on a line. I mean, what are you going to do?
Once again, if you... Artie from Pete and Pete, Toby Huss doing the voice of Khan, the next one, the Asian
Khan,
neighbor.
Yeah, his grandpa with no shins is the guy who hates.
Is also
and
Toby Huss.
And Cotton Hill,
So this is a banner night for animation because that very same night on Fox, The Springfield Files airs, which is the Simpsons episode that's a crossover with The X-Files.
Yeah, we haven't talked about The X-Files in forever on this show.
We've talked about Simpsons every week for the last three, but
we haven't mentioned
X-Files. Hasn't been a big episode,
But this is Mulder and Scully appear in Springfield.
To investigate an alien appearance.
I bring you love.
I bring you nothing.
He brings us love. Don't let him get away. Break his legs.
Chasing it's the feds.
That's my favorite. Yeah. Mo running around with a fucking orca on his back.
I got that clip if you want to.
I've seen enough, Mulder. Let's go.
Yeah, okay. But somewhere out there, something is watching us. There are alien forces acting in ways we can't perceive. Are we alone in the universe? Impossible. When you consider the wonders that exist all around us. Voodoo priests of Haiti, the Tibetan numerologists of Appalachia, the unsolved mysteries of unsolved mysteries. The truth is out there.
Goons carrying him.
No! Oh, who'd have thought a whale could be so heavy? Cheese it, defense!
I've seen enough.
But it's such a weird, like, they think, like, Mo thinks they're onto him, and you're like, why is Mo so nervous in this scene?
Gag.
And then he runs
into
the...
Get him out of here!
He's like, they're hosing down a giant Shamu in the back. Like, we gotta get him out of here.
Jig us up! Get him.
I feel like that's been sort of almost a running gag. That, I mean, there have been many, many times where it's like, oh, a cop's in here. And he's back. He's got like a panda fighting ring. I miss those.
This might also be the last time that Leonard Nimoy guested. I mean, he did the monorail episode and then this, and I can't remember anything else he did.
Yeah, I think it might have been.
But I personally had initially a bad reaction to this because, like, I didn't start watching The X-Files until like a year or two later when my friend Brian introduced me to it. But like, I just remember being like, oh, so Matt Groening won't put his name on the critic episode, but he'll put it on this episode. Mm. And
I wonder where this idea came from. I'm sure we'll find out on Talking Simpsons, TalkingSimpsons.com in a few years. But because that read from Duchovny isn't anything like Mulder, like screaming at the top of his lungs about the truth.
Yeah.
Does he ever raise his voice?
He's still pretty flat.
To monologue?
Still seem kind of Mulder-y to me.
Nah, I don't think so.
As someone who's watched the whole series twice, I still feel like it felt
yelling the truth is out there, it seems. To me, it seems like The Simpsons having a list of what the show is about rather than having seen the show.
No, he yells a lot because he's a very passionate man.
From what I saw.
So,
from all porn.
Yeah. Across the dial on CBS that evening, the 23rd annual People's Choice Awards airs. Yeah. It wasn't in the previous segment because I think they moved it to January, like sometime during the 90s. So hosted by Don Johnson and Roma Downey. Was that Touched by an Angel?
Yeah,
or?
Yeah, Touched by an Angel Lady.
So here, there's not a whole lot of awards, so I'll just go through. Favorite new TV comedy, Cosby.
Yeah! It'll live forever.
Favorite female musical performer, Reba McEntire. Favorite male musical performer, Garth Brooks. Favorite comic...
No, wait, what? Who voted for this?
The people.
Garth Brooks was...
Yeah, he was
massively
huge.
And Reba McEntire?
But Reba McEntire, I'm surprised by.
I don't want to... Paul Letter... And Cosby? I'm just...
Hey,
I mean, I don't know when Cosby was.
I don't know anything about elections anymore. Anyway,
hey, we got so favorite comedy movie, Nutty Professor. Favorite daytime show, Days of Our Lives. Favorite male TV performer, Tim Allen. Favorite female performer in a new TV series. You want to get angry about something? Brooke Shields.
Suddenly Susan.
Yeah. A favorite TV female performer, Oprah Winfrey. That's kind
performer,
of
performer, very good. Yeah, playing Oprah Winfrey for a long time.
Favorite movie actor to compliment Cosby, Mel Gibson.
Some legacy.
Great
never
dudes
died.
Getting honored this year. Favorite TV comedy, Seinfeld. Favorite TV drama, ER. Favorite movie actress, Sandra Bullock. Favorite male performer in a new TV series, Bill Cosby and Michael J. Fox. Both won that. Favorite new TV drama, Millennium. to cap it all off, favorite dramatic motion picture.
You'll be upset.
You know what it is?
Think of 96 movies that we talked about last year.
Twister.
I'd be very happy with that.
not the
but you're close.
We watched this and was
Independence Day.
It is Independence Day.
Man, the people.
Today
suck.
Is our Independence Day. That was dramatic.
No. Don't let us vote for anything again.
No. People's Choice and American Music Awards are both garbage awards.
Yeah.
Honestly, the Grammys and the Golden Globes are too, and all awards suck.
As you would have seen if you heard that 2010 wrap up episode. Independence Day
is a drama.
And on WB that night, the people did not choose Kirk. The WB Kirk Cameron vehicle. This is the last time he had a regular TV show.
I bet he was so pleasant to work with. WB Network's trying to push the envelope, get new shows out there, and he was probably receptive to every kind of comedy.
He's the rebellious son,
R.I.P. Alan Thicke.
Yeah. Like, it is. That is the picture of, like, when someone says, like, this person's become a Jesus freak. Like, religion is okay, but when you take it to that extreme, like, I can't be mean on this TV show. I can't be the rambunctious son.
Then don't be
like,
an actor.
You're an actor!
Yeah, it's not appropriate for me and my girlfriend to be sitting on opposite edges of a bed together.
Yeah.
Like,
the first Playboy I ever saw had his girlfriend, Mike Seaver's girlfriend, on the show in it. So it's the first thing. Don't even get, you don't have to get gross. I didn't know how to jerk. I found it in my dad's closet, and I looked at it all the time, and then I found out she was fired just by him, just for appearing in Playboy. What a dick. Fuck him.
So that's it for TV.
Yeah.
Games taking us out of 1997, and actually a pretty big one here. Yeah. Soul Blade, sometime this month in January 1997. I didn't get a hard date, but this is the PS1 PlayStation home version of Namco's Soul Edge, which was the start of Soul Calibur series, which you may know more of, because there's five
Soul Calibur Zero.
Soul Calibur Zero, yeah.
Yeah, why would they change the name to Calibur? I guess because
the next one came out on Dreamcast. I don't know if it was like a rights thing.
No, I think it was just like they weren't super. I mean, they'd already changed the name. It was like Soul Blade.
Soul Edge.
Changed it to Soul. Well, Soul Edge to Soul Blade, and then it's just like Soul Calibur.
Oh, and if you had to work in a field where you type about games, even if you're not playing them, they change the spelling of Soul Calibur every year.
Yeah. Well, it's like the Soul Calibur 4 was famous for like, no, the official spelling is all caps, one word.
All caps, one word, and or then, the Calibur's like with a U or with an E.
It's always with UR.
Oh, I thought it had multiple spellings.
It's usually UR, but it's like, but yeah, it was like Soul Calibur 3 is intercaps, but not all caps. And Soul Calibur 5
infuriating.
That
was cute when an egomaniacal producer thought of it.
It gets
less cute for everybody has to deal with it.
Sorry, Sony, I'm not spelling six axis with a TM sign everywhere I go.
But I will put brackets around prototype every time
Jesus
I write
Christ.
It.
But Soul Calibur, or you know, Soul Blade, when it came home to PS1, Namco, we talked about Tekken 2 last year. Was a 3D fighting game that was, you know, kind of taken the... Street Fighter was the big 2D fighting game, Street Fighter Mortal Kombat, but as 3D fighters took hold, Virtua Fighter was kind of the, you know, initiator, you could say, but it was... Soul Edge and Tekken were like the big arcade fighting games, and the difference, Tekken was more fists, I mean, it means Iron Fist, but like, Soul Edge was more like, here's a bunch of, you know, people from around the world, but all... almost Greek mythology style, like knives, swords, sword and shields, knights, pirates, like, and the main guy Cervantes is looking for this sword that will keep him, make him immortal, and they all have weapons. Everybody has some kind of like spear or pointed weapon, and the weapons can clash against each other and bounce off each other.
I just got why the spelling is that way. It's like Excalibur. Soul Calibur. I feel so smart. Only took 20 years.
There were things about this game that like never really were done in later Soul Calibur games that I kind of liked and miss. Like, they had this adventure mode where you could get different swords.
Calibur 2, the GameCube one that, well, the Soul Calibur 2 had some kind of adventure mode.
Yeah.
You go around and get money and... But yeah, like this has a bunch of cool like modes for single player stuff.
The intro scene is one of my favorite things of all time. If you don't have a closer,
that's
going
to be the closer for this segment because this intro. I mean, we already talked like 6 months ago or so when Tekken 2 came out. The Tekken 2 intro is I can't make a bigger kissy face to the sky with that Tekken 2 intro, but. Namco did it again with the Soul Edge, Soul Blade opening.
So this game actually, kind of like Sonic CD, has two different soundtracks.
Yeah.
And they both have amazing names. One is called the Soul Super Battle Sound Attack Soul Edge.
Nice.
And the other one is called Soul Edge Original Soundtrack Con Super Session.
This will like lead us... I'll have to pause this before the song starts. But
one other thing I got to say about this game. The endings are so weird because like... You know, I'd played Tekken by this point, and Tekken 2, and I love those CG endings, but this game had endings that would have, in a lot of cases, like, kind of hidden button prompts where you could switch the ending, and what's his name, Siegfried?
Yeah.
Like, whether you press a button at a certain point determines whether he takes the Soul Blade and gets consumed by it, or whether he, like, rejects it.
And he becomes Nightmare.
Yeah, and then there's one with Mitsurugi, where he's facing the first man to ever have a gun in feudal Japan, and when you start the, like, at some point in the ending, it becomes a first-person dodge-the-bullet simulator. It's really, really... weird and kind of cool, and the thing I miss, like,
that's kind
of that
neat.
The game isn't over when it's over. Like, you can still do things during the ending.
The home conversions of all the Tekkens and Soul Edge, Soul Calibur just felt so bursting with extra stuff. But this, I'll just play this the beginning of the opening. We'll go out with the proper song, but this set.
I need to find
it. It made me think maybe violins are cool.
Yeah, and like if
they are cool.
My dream is to find it. I would assume a Japanese karaoke place that has
this song. Is silly. Well, we're not going to play the song just yet, but this is the narrator. Ship on the Sea.
Transcending history and the world.
Ah!
Tales, songs, and swords. Eternally retold.
And then...
That is...
Go!
And then, dude, this song is the most cheesy, nonsensical, goofiness.
Wonderful 90s Japan.
1,000,000% love it. Great. Couldn't love it anymore. Great. But we'll go out with this song. But yeah, it was such a cool game. And again, if you... Dreamcast launched on $99.99 with Soul Calibur, which was, again, another like incredible experience.
I feel like it should have saved that platform. That game was so fun.
I mean, for a launch game, it was like
huge
one
crowd
of the... best-selling games I think Sega had ever been a part of, at least for launches. But yeah, we'll go out with this song from the opening song from Soul Blade, and when we come back this same week, 2007.
Internet and all the ships at sea. It's time for an Eye in His Classic Corner. We look even further back in time this week to see if there's any classic movies worth watching. For the week of January 6th through 12th, you know what? Even back in 1942 and 1967, 50 and 75 years ago, January was a dumping ground. There was not really anything interesting going on. 75 years ago this week, got Ships with Wings and All Through the Night. Two kind of forgettable movies. I guess the most interesting thing that happened that week is the very first Pan Am Airlines flight around the world. I don't know how they pulled that off, because a lot of the world was on fire because there's a freaking war going on. Anyway, 50 years ago this week, the NFL announced that the new expansion team in New Orleans would be called the Saints. So happy 50th birthday to the Saints and the whole Houdat Nation. Woo! And also, in 1967, 50 years ago, Edward Brooks became the first black man elected to the U.S. Senate. Yeah, that seems like way too recent, guys. And he was from Massachusetts and he was a Republican. Anyway, since there really aren't any movies to recommend from way back in the day, this week I'd like to recommend something that we actually missed last year in 2006 because of foreign movies and the release dates and how everything goes. We missed The Lives of Others, of the German film about East German Stasi secret police spying. It was actually from 2006. It's a really interesting Cold War movie. I totally recommend it. It was on Netflix. I think it might be gone, but I recommend. Yeah, Lives of Others. Sorry we missed it. And that's it for this week. Stay classic. Is Candylion from Gruff Reese?
Huh?
Gruff Rise, who's the front man for another band, Super Furry Animals.
Oh, I know them.
But a Welsh psychedelic rock band, but this is the song Candylion.
I feel like I'm getting hot flashes from weird levels of estrogen in me right now. What is happening?
I could have played the song from Gravedigger, who also had I can't believe a monster truck can make music.
Don't harsh my buzz, man.
That happen?
But yeah, that's bringing us in Candylion.
So fluffy.
It's so, so pleasant. and then Beyonce, Irreplaceable, still number one.
Yep. It won't be replaced.
It will not. It refuses to die. not well. So for news this week, last episode we played the iPhone announcement clip, but it turns out I think we were actually supposed to have played it here.
We were a couple days off,
but nonetheless, we did discuss that.
Need all the tech sites to the scoop.
Yep. Yeah.
iPhone 10.
However, most of the tech reporters were 5 when that happened. they were 20.
Yeah. Their beard was only a centimeter.
Yeah. Everybody go watch Steve Jobs, Michael Fassbender.
Really?
Was it good?
I really liked it.
Really?
Or Jobs. Not Steve Jobs.
I only
want to
watch the Ashton Kutcher one.
No, not the Ashton Kutcher one.
Okay.
I only watch Kutch joints.
No.
Huh.
Well, then you're missing out on the Sorkin joint.
Movies,
I really liked it.
Movies this week, we can start with Alpha Dog. Let's just get into it then.
These weren't bad kids. These weren't kids who grew up playing Little League together. They grew up in beautiful homes. They were living what's rapidly becoming the young person's rap version of the American dream. They were living the life. And Johnny was the ringleader.
Yeah, this is, I think, sort of based on a true story tale of how a suburban white kid became... We got on one of the FBI's most wanted lists for dealing the drugs.
Emily Hirst, Justin Timberlake.
Yeah,
I remember this being Justin Timberlake's, like, one of his first, I'm going to try acting.
Yeah, it's huge.
And literally the only thing I remember about this, I've heard it's okay, but that I remember seeing a website that made fun of people's Chinese tattoos and what they said they meant and what they actually meant. Yeah. And they had a picture of, I'm pretty sure it was Timberlake in this, that just has random Chinese tattoos. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, most of this is gibberish, but this section right here on his bicep, ice skating.
Yeah. Emil Hirsch.
That's
Justin,
all I think of now.
Justin Timberlake, Bruce Willis, and the late, great Anton Yelchin.
From
a movie written and directed by Nick Cassavetes.
Oh, no kidding.
Mm-hmm.
Also at this week, Primeval.
Orlando
Jones versus a giant croc.
I remember I'd seen a giant crocodile movie set in Africa, and I couldn't remember where it was, and I realized it was this one. It's a giant crocodile movie.
I'm in.
And it's set in Africa, and I remember, you know, it being fine for that sort of thing, and kind of liking that there's, like, a political slant to it, and that the crocodile didn't start eating people until the Civil War started killing the people, and there are these bodies around, and that's how he got the taste for it.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, it's no Lake Placid. Lake Placid's a hoot.
But, oh, yeah, so good.
And I'm from Florida, so we learned to make peace with the Gators a long time ago.
Yeah, I remember I watched it for, like, a bad movie Sunday, and we ended up going, like, yeah, that was fun. It's a B movie. What do you want?
And then, you know, slightly more important, or as far as film goes, we mentioned this happened at the end of last month, but wider release this week. Letters from Iwo Jima.
Yeah,
gets a proper national release.
Try to grab a clip of it, but it's all in Japanese, and only Elston would understand it.
Not a lot of it,
and even then. I
no,
never
like,
saw
Clint
this.
Clint Eastwood monologue, like, here's the letter I got from Iwo Jima.
That's Little Nicky.
Take it easy, Dragon Lady. He said that in Gran Torino. Sorry, that was, I'm switching my movies up.
I don't know what's wrong with you people that you haven't seen this movie.
Hey, because I don't tend to jerk off that hard over this war.
So good. But how many World War II movies have you seen from the Japanese perspective?
And only Tora, Tora, Tora.
Right. And that's not really from the Japanese
perspective. From everybody's
perspective. Everybody's.
And I should see it, because I saw a quote on the internet that I laughed at, and this never happens because I never remember what I say, and the quote was from me. Because I called this the greatest generation's Pokemon Gold and Silver, because this is Clint Eastwood's Flags of Our Fathers and Letters to Iwo Jima that came out around the same time. And apparently, Flags of Our Fathers didn't do that well. And I think that was the one I was skipping out on, because that one critics didn't seem to respond to it, and not anybody else I know.
Yeah.
But this was an original idea. The same battle from a different perspective. And the Japanese during World War II are what fascinates me now, because I know what motivated us and what our government was telling us, and it's fucking fascinating to find out how that went on the other side. And
it's terrifying to watch.
Some of it, yeah.
A lot of the movie is terrifying, because it's to surrender or be captured is to dishonor everyone forever.
Yeah.
And so they're fighting and fighting and fighting, and then it gets to be a point where it's like, well, do we go out and try to take them all with us, or do we just go out, or do we wait and wait for them to kill us, or should I just charge them with a sword, maybe? and it's just a lot of people eating grenades.
Wow,
which is a fast way to go.
Wow.
Fast way to go. I'll give you that. But, I mean, it stars Ken Watanabe, who's an
Ken Watanabe.
Fucking great actor. Yeah. And it is a really, really interesting movie.
Yeah, the
Let them fight.
Family member.
Let them fight.
Family member, friend of the family who was in Japan in the 60s as like a contractor to like help them rebuild. And like he was like, yeah. And it was, I mean, he's, you know, obviously old now to have been there in the 60s. Oh, yeah. But he was like, yeah, I mean, people, I mean, unsurprisingly, just still a lot of grudges and a lot of anger still there. And like people would approach him in their old military uniforms they're still hanging on to. Because a lot of them were told, like, they grew up in a system that said, like, in America, it was very much, bring the boys home. Mm-hmm. Like, we're fighting so everybody can come home and be with their families. Whereas in Japan, it was the exact opposite, which was, do not come home. Your job is to die. Mm-hmm. If you come home, then you've somehow failed your mission, which is to give your life for this land, the emperor, the empire. Mm-hmm. That's what you're supposed to go do. So all these guys walking around who either were captured or didn't get a chance to go off and die, like, there's this sense in them that they're like, I need to get in a fight, or like I can't let this go. And this guy's an American, and you're in my face, and I'm not going to let you walk on my land. And there'd be people that would just walk up and start fights, and he would luckily had, you know, handlers with him who were like, dude, let it go. Like that was at that point 20-25 years ago. Yeah. You got to move on.
Holy shit.
Well, so like, I don't know. There's a lot of, this is why another one of those things, like, no one we'll ever know what people live through, and like all the insane behavior. Like, we did a lot of evil shit. Yeah. Japan, obviously, and plenty of stuff in Europe going down there.
Let's not get crazy.
Straight up,
straight up.
But it's like the idea that like one country is like, yeah, sure, we're righter than some of the others, but the idea that our hands are clean, no way. The world was never as crazy as it was for that decade. Like, that level of madness.
Worldwide.
No one alive today can put their head there. You can't understand.
I get fucking crazy misty now in non-dramatic 1940s movies and documentaries, just because, like, to see people use young people from all over the globe as just fodder.
Yeah.
For this, like, and people, just people using people at, like, from everywhere. My grandfather was there. Like, it just, Jesus Christ. We had to learn how ugly war like that was, and hopefully we don't fucking forget. I appreciate our forefathers from every corner of the globe for figuring out what an ugly fucking world war looked like and why we should seek to avoid it from now on. Yeah. And I hope everybody remembers that.
Please remember this. Don't let it be so long ago. Yeah. Can we get to a century without a world war? That would be great.
That would be pretty
Man,
sweet.
Man, aliens. But, that's when the Vulcans come, or the Romulans come in and give us a.
At this point, I'm straight up praying for an alien intervention. Like, please land, and if not unify us through peaceful means, unify us through a common enemy.
Yeah.
Let's go. Let's get something everybody can agree on.
And you guys are angry that Independence Day won the People's Choice.
Yeah, I guess I will say I don't find the movie very political. If there's anything political, because again, yes, Clint Eastwood, famously conservative. If you want to pull any politics into it, you could argue, and this is why we dropped the bomb, because we didn't want to stage an invasion of the Japanese homeland that would look like this.
Right.
You know what? Fair argument. I don't know if I agree, but okay.
You guys are all making me feel really bad for that framed picture right behind you of the doozers raising the flag at Iwo Jima instead of soldiers. have that.
Because it's back and forth of, like, they would have fought to the last person.
Right.
We were like, you know, it would have been just the absolute... Just we'd have to mop out towns from beginning to end and firebomb the whole country, or they were going to give up anyway because they're running out of like whatever, like they're on their last
legs. Russians to scare.
It's like you can't fight a war on all fronts when you're a country that's the size of California. Like it's just not realistic. Yep. And so I mean, you could spend this all day, but
But mostly, I the thing that I like about it is, I mean, besides that, there's. Seeing a war that we're really used to seeing from the other side and understanding it a little better and understanding some of the cultural perspectives. But you could also just be like, this could be anywhere at any time, and war fucking is gross.
Yeah.
The point is that we send young men off to slaughter and get slaughtered. And does it
to
end
prove
up,
a point?
Does it end up changing anything in the end? Maybe sometimes. Maybe. Yeah. Or maybe
the
not.
Point is,
I don't know. Whatever.
You were left with the least people.
Yeah.
You lose the war. Great.
Yeah.
This was worth it. Fuck.
Now, if they'd
what
only
we
heard,
to begin with?
If they'd only heard the Patton speech about how no one ever won a war for dying for his country. You do it making the other son of a bitch die for his country. Anyway, I totally recommend this. I think everyone should watch it.
I'm willing to give it a shot if I can,
find it
anywhere.
Hard pivot to stomp the yard.
Some of you may think you know what stepping is.
For over 100 years, every generation has reinvented it, redefined it, and made it their own.
Our next step.
I've never seen stepping like this before.
Thanks, Sway.
Wow.
Eastwood is so diverse in his filmmaking.
Are they suggesting that stomping hard is the next evolution of dancing?
You gotta stomp the yacht.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about this film. Like a fraternity of dancers. It looks well choreographed and really pretty.
Saw like the Step Up movies and and not all of them, but I was like, yeah, these movies look ridiculous on trailer, but when you watch a lot of good dancing and that's why this is here.
And like everything else here, straight to video sequels.
Well, yeah. I didn't see it.
Stomp the yard, stomp the neighbor's yard. Stomp president's yard.
Stomp the planet.
And then stomp buddies. when the dogs come out and they start stomping.
Stomp the yard, clean the yard, mow the yard.
TV this week.
So after all that war.
Okay.
So I hope you guys are ready for some reality television.
Yay! Oh, good.
Another different kind of fighting.
Yes. January 7th, 2007, Grease, You're the One That I Want debuts.
No.
And this is, so many shows had such weird prizes. Like, nowadays it's like, you win $1 million, or you win a husband or wife. But this was a reality television show designed to cast the lead roles of Sandy and Danny in the Broadway revival of the musical Grease.
Mm.
So, pretty big stakes. Like, this is a person who's going to have a job that thousands and thousands of people will be
winning
watching.
A job is pretty cool.
Yeah.
So, but it's just American Idol with a narrow focus.
Mm-hmm.
Instead
yeah.
of you get to put out an album.
Ooh, do you think you'll get tired of that fucking music?
It's
after
American
the show?
Idol, but without the pesky modern music
yeah.
made in the 70s and 80s and 90s. January 10th, 2007, Armed and Famous debuts on CBS.
Mm-hmm.
This is a reality show where Erik Estrada, LaToya Jackson, Jack Osbourne, Trish Stratus,
all the hits,
and Wee Man
Jason Acuna.
Became reserve police officers.
Wow.
It lasted for 3 weeks.
Oh.
Wow. What channel?
CBS.
CBS.
How weird would it be to get arrested by LaToya Jackson? Oh, Lord.
Poor Wee Man.
Come on, dude.
Yeah,
you have the right to remain silent, bro.
This is, peak NBC focusing on the wrong thing. Like, I think that around this point, there were, no scripted programming during the first hour of any given night. So that's why there's Grease and also the return of The Apprentice, season 6, where they move to L.A. I have a clip of it.
Great producer on that show.
Yeah.
Hi, Melania. How's California?
Great.
I'm heading to the airport right now. I'll see you in Los Angeles very soon.
I can't wait to see you. Have a safe flight.
I will.
Fake baby noise!
What the hell?
Fake fucking Aaliyah baby noise in the middle.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Hear yourself.
Say bye-bye, Daddy. See you soon.
Bye.
Bon voyage.
He's saying goodbye to Barron,
Trump,
the child
and I have properties all over the place. In fact, my newest golf course in L.A., Trump National, is doing amazingly well.
Just there you go.
Huge. It's doing
immediately
huge.
Everything
huge.
I do is good. Anyone who criticizes it is dumb and
I'm
bad and
I'm saying
failing.
Hello to my most beautiful wife and cutest baby.
Same that shit he said for 40 years.
20 seconds. Pure fraudulence. Like, in 20 seconds of a TV show intro.
Yeah.
Fake baby noises. I own properties. You have names on properties, motherfucker. Like, I don't regret voting for him.
I think this was the greatest premiere, and all the other premieres are disasters.
It's just like
the worst.
A magazine goes like, yeah, he's not doing a very good job. Oh, that magazine's the worst. Like, you didn't have an opinion until they didn't like you.
Yep.
And then now all of a sudden,
and if they praise him,
it's good.
He's only
it's the
saying
best.
That.
No, it's not the not good. It's the best.
It's
ever.
The most transparent. I don't know how to finish the sentence.
Narcissism.
Speechless.
Your speechlessness is the worst. You're a disaster. Yeah. Brett is a
all
mess.
Of you are haters. You don't understand. You're all failing. Disasters. Miserable. The opposite of tremendous.
Yeah, you're
that's
you're
what
you're right, Chris. No, you're right.
I am what?
Yeah.
We're
no,
all failing?
If I say you're right, You have to say the exact opposite.
I'm confused.
Now.
Let me hold my mouth in a little O for what?
And then no sense of humor.
The second I say you're right, all of a sudden, this is the greatest podcast that has ever with the most wonderful bubble.
You know, Diana
classiest.
Has some good qualities sometimes. Sometimes we agree on certain things. It was a great talk. Great talk. Tremendous talk.
Fuck you.
Diana's failing. Diana's heart is made of cold, cold steel.
Nasty woman.
Nasty woman. Nasty woman.
Also, I'm Jewish.
I heard her brain is made by the Chinese. This is just what I'm hearing. I'm hearing it.
I'm just putting it out
Everyone
there.
Everyone is saying.
These are bigly rumors. Bigly rumors. Doing the whole seal gesture where I put
Chris,
my elbows down to my side and
Chris,
do this.
You can't even make fun of people anymore unless I'm the one making fun of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't know how to
I feel like I would do this if I could meet Mr. President-elect Trump. I feel like I would do that all day.
I would
be like, wow, you're really right. You know, because you really understand me. Hey, go fuck yourself. You're a fucking disaster, Goodman. Get the fuck out of here. You're right how much of a disaster I am. And I would just do it back and forth until his hair caught on fire.
So confused. What's happening right now?
Should we play another 20 seconds of the intro?
Wow, yeah, 20 seconds, that much.
Man. Yeah, so...
But, like, this was going on well before he ran for anything. So,
but just the fact
all these criticisms have been around.
Almost 10 years to the day that he will... 10 years and, like, 3 weeks before it will presumably be sworn in as president. So the season moves to L.A. from New York. There's a great... Like,
I won't do it.
The very next scene is him in a convertible. My hair is not moving.
How related?
Please note this. Also, with the change in scenery comes... I don't know if you remember the early seasons of Apprentice.
No.
He had people with him in the boardroom. Like this really old guy and this blonde lady. I forget their names. But they were replaced.
Give me something to bounce off of. You know what I'm talking about? The sweater puppies, David. Bigly sweater puppies.
Well, I think he...
Elect me. I'm going to eat you.
Guess who the new people who are with him in the boardroom for all of his major decisions? Ivanka Trump and Donald Trump Jr. join the cast, sitting with him as he fires people. And the entire concept of the season is has versus have-nots, kind of like he ran his election.
Huh.
I couldn't earn a posse, so I had to make one.
So it's split up into two teams, and one team, if they win the weekly tasks, they get to live in the Beverly Hills mansion, the whatever place Trump...
Bush League. Yeah. Bush League.
So, but the losers have to live in Tent City, which does not have access to electricity. The contestants have to sleep in tents.
Because of losers.
And they only have cold showers and a grill to make food on.
Can't get hard on them.
This is not Celebrity Apprentice.
No, but this
These
is...
These are people. But if they lose, they have to sleep in tents.
They have to sleep in a tent.
I do genuinely forget there's non-celebrities for a little while.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is the second to last time they would do it. So, this season, it didn't have the highest ratings of all time. I don't know why.
It did, but the ratings were rigged.
Yeah.
Or the rigged were ratings. I don't know which one.
Whatever explains me not having to answer for anything. That's the answer.
You look genuinely depressed.
This season did do well, and from this spawned Celebrity Apprentice for a bunch of seasons. And then he did it one more time trying to go back.
Bringing
to
a bunch of people less famous than me. Nobody gets an enemy unless... said a lot of racist shit on there that Mark Burnett won't turn over.
And that is why I say that our president-elect was a game show host.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We've elected a game show host, everybody. And it's not Bob Barker.
Who will I select for my cabinet? No one knows the finalists but me. That's like verbatim. He said that. Nobody knows but me.
Me. All right.
I call 1-866-HIRE-MITT if you want Rodney.
If any of this made you mad, you should have stopped listening to the segment a long time ago.
We've been at this a while. We're a little slap happy, and we got a vent, baby.
People in office have to be able to be criticized, and just on top of disagreeing on things, it's like you can't even.
People criticize a failure.
You can't even take a joke about.
Don't you dare criticize that baby cooing.
Things you do and say on a national stage.
That. It's hard to be this immaculate.
No chill at all.
I gotta laugh or else I'll cry.
So NBC redeems itself this week with the 30 Rock episode, The Rural Jurors.
Okay,
so
good. I'm back.
Which is about Jane Krakowski starring in a movie that nobody quite knows the name of.
The Rural Juror.
Juror. All
right,
so. This is the song about Rural Juror.
I'm a lerman, merman, murder. Turn the birds, word lurid. The whir and the purr of a twirler girl. She would the world, word demure. The insurer's a law for valor. Whop your carriwara. One fervid whirl over her turgid error. Rural juror. Rural juror. I will never forget you, Rural Juror. I'll always be glad I met you, Rural Juror.
God, just
so,
yeah,
because you were reminding me that talking about all those bigly NBC reality shows that Tina Fey, like right a year or two after this, accepted the Emmy for Best Show. Yeah. And said, "I'm sorry, NBC. My show's not. I'm sorry, our show isn't a talk show.
Yeah,
it isn't as cheap to produce as a reality show.
Well, that was she was really lampooning on Jay Leno. I think.
Yeah,
right?
I think so.
Yeah.
Roger.
Yeah,
Roger. What a great season-long joke, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that just never that never got unfunny for some reason. The Rural Juror, and only she could say it and sing it. Jane Krakowski. Yeah. What the hell?"
Also this week, the 33rd annual People's Choice Awards, January 9th, hosted by Queen Latifah. This year's awards, favorite new TV comedy. New TV comedy,
the
by
Apprentice.
The way, it. I'm not funny. I'm always serious. Unless I want to be funny, then I'm the funniest.
Then I'm hilarious.
But favorite new TV comedy is, half the time it's, this show doesn't last, so look how dated it is. So, The Class, one, I have no idea what that show is.
What?
Beating out 30 Rock.
Wow.
Favorite movie drama, Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man's Chest.
Great drama, by the way.
Favorite funny male star, Robin Williams.
Yeah.
Favorite male action star, Johnny Depp.
Okay.
All right.
Favorite male TV star, Patrick Dempsey.
Sure.
McDreamy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Favorite pop song, Hips Don't Lie.
Okay.
It's good.
Favorite rock song, Who Says You Can't Go Home by Bon Jovi.
Know that song.
What
weird.
The fuck is that?
Doesn't matter.
Let's close the show.
Favorite female singer, Carrie Underwood. Favorite male singer, Kenny Chesney. Favorite TV comedy, 2 and a Half Men. Favorite funny female star, Ellen DeGeneres. Favorite family movie, Cars. Favorite female movie star, Jennifer Aniston. Favorite movie comedy, Click. Favorite TV drama, Grey's Anatomy. Favorite group, Nickelback. Favorite leading lady, Cameron Diaz. Favorite female star, female TV star, Eva Longoria. Favorite hip-hop song, Raiden. Favorite animated comedy, The Simpsons. Favorite leading man, Vince Vaughn. Favorite country song, Before He Cheats. Favorite R&B song, Sexy Back.
So, can I just stop right here? We just finished 2006. I did not realize these days were so dark and horrible. Wow.
They were forecasting something.
Okay.
Favorite new TV drama, Heroes. Favorite reality show, The Apprentice. No, I'm just kidding. American Idol. American
Idol. People's Choice is rigged.
Yeah.
We're the biggest ratings. They did.
They're the puppets.
They're the puppets. No puppet.
And last but not...
Who am I? What time is it?
You thought it was weird when Donald Trump went to the White House. What about Cory in the House? Cory in the House debuted on the Disney Channel. It's about a boy who moved to the White House when his dad is hired by the president. I think the way that most of us know it is because it's got terribly bad Nintendo DS box art. Cory in the House.
Yeah. I met Cory in the House.
Really?
At a 2008 party in the Nintendo World Store.
So it was not in a house, though.
No, it was in the Nintendo building.
Elton in the store.
What's his name? Saved by the Bell. The main guy.
Mark Paul Gosselaar.
Yeah, he was there. Kellen got a picture with him. Mm-hmm. And Cory in the House was there. It was some...
I love that that's his name. So appropriate.
I don't know his real name. It's Cory something.
Please keep calling him Cory in the House.
That's so you know which Cory I'm referring to.
When you said that, I just assumed it was a Corey Haim or Feldman.
I think we got to stream this game. I just love that. Just a kid sitting in front of the White House with
his
millennial pals.
Nice.
Wow.
Well, that started.
The black president. Come on.
No, his dad was hired by the president.
Oh,
his black dad serves the prime.
Moving out of goddamn TV. Goddamn. Video games this week, actually something fairly big, is Lost Planet, which is 10 flipping years old, which is One of the first events I remember going that we were both at that was kind of like weirdly opulent.
It was my first event, period. And I didn't start working there until like November.
Like ice sculptures in the shape
rock
of the logo, wall climbing roll.
Custom t-shirt makers.
Yeah, so it came out in Japan last month and the rest of the world in January 12th. And this wouldn't come to PS3 until 2008. This is one of those games that launched on 360 and just eventually came to
Back
PlayStation.
When people took chances and launched new properties on new systems.
So yeah, Dead Rising was Capcom's first big next-gen title, you know, to make the leap from the PS2 Xbox original era into Xbox 360. But Lost Planet was Capcom, like, their entrance trying to get into big multiplayer online shooters, big action set pieces, high technology pushing stuff in the action of, like, you know, you could say Gears of War, but it's not quite like that.
Oh, no, it doesn't.
No, it's not quite like that, but it's on a frozen planet, humans versus giant bugs is what it boils down to.
With wonderfully orange glowing spots. I
huge glowing weak spots. Crazy good visual, like the explosions, the motion blur, the sensation of being in a battlefield and huge just explosions and happening and knocking you off your feet. I don't know, there was just nothing else like it. And I really took to this and was so into Lost Planet. And as far as shooters went, like, it was a little sluggish because you're almost always knee to waist deep in snow.
I love the way that looked, though.
But you had,
hadn't
like,
seen that in a game before.
Yeah,
you snow was just a textured surface that you stepped
on. It had
on.
This felt like part of the world, and like you had a grappling hook that let you zip around the area really quickly. There's a lot of, they call them vital suits. They're actually just like little mechs that you get in that let you zip around the snow and shoot rockets at each other. And there was all the like, cool little exploits you could pull off and like throw a grenade and shoot the grenade in the air and the explosion is even bigger than if you had just thrown it. Just fun stuff to play with. I totally loved Lost Planet.
Dude, at that time when there was nothing else, like nobody was even trying anything new. It was a bunch of fucking ports and like failed first party stuff.
It was ports, and even through all of 06, like it took a while to like Oblivion was the most notable Xbox 360 thing until maybe Dead Rising and then Gears. And it's like outside of those three things, Xbox 360 didn't have any like huge marquee things. That's three games in a year, basically.
And if I may just talk about the trajectory of our lives for a second, because that was the first real big party I went to. And I felt like, oh my God, I've made it. I have made it, done everything I want to do. Years later, I would end up working for that company who threw the party. Cut to last week when I drove by the building that party was in, and it's been bulldozed to make way for more Zynga building.
Well,
everything is topsy-turvy.
For what it's worth, that Zynga building used to be the Sega building. But here's the summary of like with the planet and the premise that sets up the whole game.
It was TC minus 80. 80 years before the trial century. Humankind had abandoned the comfort of a familiar world in order to attempt life on EDN3. As emigration to the new world progressed, facilities were constructed to handle the growing population, and colonization appeared to be successful. With the expansion of the colony, humanity encountered a new alien life form. Known as the Acrid, they were immediately identified as a hostile presence. The humans had no weapons with which to repel Acrid aggression, and were forced to retreat from their new home. While fleeing from the enigmatic menace, the humans discovered the precious thermal energy lying within the very bodies of the Acrid. It was a powerful new energy source.
So basically, we find this energy source that keeps people alive, basically, instead of fuel, because it's so cold on this... why they would be there. It's so cold that even just being outside makes your energy drain, basically, and you collect this thermal energy to stay alive, which was another gameplay mechanic that was kind of explains why do all the enemies have obvious weak points, because that's their glowing energy that keeps them from dying, and then when you collect it, you don't freeze to death.
I'm on the bug side immediately right now.
Yeah, we are.
Those fucking colonizers are just coming and taking over everything, and it's not just enough you take the land, you gotta actually drink the blood of the people.
It is, but the Acrid designs were super cool. I thought they looked really neat. They're just giant, crazy bugs, and I don't know. Really love this game a lot, and Lost Planet 2 did not really capitalize on it, and Lost Planet 3 even less so. So it was optioned for a movie for a while. There was like 5 years straight where it was like, oh, yeah, totally going to make a movie, and then I think quietly, we're not going to make that movie. So
it kind of lost, what would you call it, some identity. Like, what was Lost Planet in each game?
All three
is
games
completely
are pretty
different.
Yeah.
The third one is like, I'm a country dad.
I'm a relatable human being. I'm here to put the
fence posts in and make sure we're all.
I'm gonna put this somber country tune in my.
I'm a Korean movie star.
yeah. The face scan of a Korean movie star, Wayne, and the name of the character.
His name
game
is Wayne.
But like, you know, whatever. It's a really good game. 10 years old this week. That is the end of the show. You can always go to 302010.net. That's the words to follow along with each post. Mm-hmm. Leave comments, talk about the show, talk about what you were doing in this time period, perhaps.
I love it.
And you can, of course, find us on iTunes, on Wondery.com, or on Stitcher, and wherever else you listen to your podcast.
And our other shows on LaserTimePodcast.com, including Laser Time. We recently recounted our best stuff of the year. Spoiler, none of this made it, because it wasn't made in 2016. But we also have a Patreon. That's how we're supported. We do appreciate all the support we get from you guys. We are allowed to eat. Some of us, Diana, is doing this on a pro bono basis, assuming she gets a cabinet position once this goes gold. There's a wrap-up episode. Last time I'll mention it on Patreon, as well as the first season of Talking Simpsons, which is also on LaserTimePodcast.com. And what else is on Patreon, David? I can't remember.
Cheap Popcast, the pro wrestling podcast. We just recently did an episode about the best wrestling of 2016.
Mm-hmm. I like the time where there are two big guys.
Yeah.
And then 1-1.
That was a great
Sometimes
match. I know which one you're talking about.
Yeah. Awesome.
There's not that many stereotypically big guys these days.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's also the home of Bonus Time, our weekly podcast about what we've been doing. It's usually what we're like our
that exact week.
It
doesn't fit in the structure of other podcasts either.
But when 302010 rolls around after a decade, we'll be able to refer back to when we talked about said movies on Bonus Time.
Oh boy,
that's like an Ouroboros. I can't take it. If you wanted to hear about video games, there's Video Game Apocalypse, which is so just about video games. And if you want to talk about classic movies and such, I am on Twitter at ListenANerd.
Brings us to the final segment of the show. The birthdays. On, again, a grand tradition, over a year old now with home movies. Birthdays this week for January, whatever the date was that I said, because it's to scroll back up would take far too long. 6th to the 12th. The birthdays are as follows. Rowan Atkinson, Joan of Arc, apparently. Nicolas Cage, Jeremy Renner, Brett Dalton, Katie Couric, David Caruso, Kenny Loggins, Elvis Presley. I think Kenny Loggins was the quiz last year, by the way. Elvis Presley, David Bowie, who died this week, 2016, when we recorded the episode.
He was right to do it.
Talking his birthday. So David Bowie officially dead.
Perfect time to check out.
Stephen Hawking, R. Kelly, Kate Middleton, Jimmy Page, Richard Nixon. I just saw an article for Redbook. Dave Matthews, AJ McClain from Backstreet Boys, Rod Stewart, Pat Benatar, George Foreman, Frank Sinatra Jr. died in 2016, but would have had a birthday had he not died. Alexander Hamilton.
Whoa.
There you go, everybody. Mary J. Blige, Amanda Peet, Howard Stern, Rob Zombie, Kirstie Alley, Rush Limbaugh, Joe Frazier.
What in the knob?
Get Joe Frazier.
Now the quiz. Man, I always gotta turn this thing back.
Start 2017 off right.
Born in 1955, won a Golden Globe and an Oscar for a 2014 film. Was a voice in Zootopia.
Idris Elba?
Guest voice in The Venture Brothers.
Oh.
J.K. Simmons.
Yes.
Damn
yes!
It!
Yes! Finally! It's been a while since I got one.
My next one was The Jackal.
And
Juno.
Oh, love him. Just kidding, Simmons.
Yes, J.K. Simmons. The 2014 movie in question was...
It's Not My Tempo.
Swiplash.
Swiplash.
Not My Fucking Tempo.
Not My Tempo.
No. 2016 was Leading Not or My dragging? Tempo.
Leading or Dragging?
Was it Rushing or was it Dragging?
It was Dragging. It was a major drag.
Yes. Yeah. But Rushing, if you think about the end of the world.
I suppose. 2017, let's make it not suck.
And to end the show, to take us out for the first fully 2017 episode of 87-97-07, Dotfliss/Hot Dad, our new theme song from him. Dave, you have a song. He posts a lot of stuff. Like, there's TV theme songs that we've talked about on other shows forever. I've played some on the show before. Fun. So much fun with those wrestler parody themes that are great. But there's just a straight-up goofy song.
Yeah, just a straight-up original joint. I love Never Changing My Clothes, which is a song I'll sometimes sing on long weekends where I don't do much.
It's great. And songs about no sense of smell. But read on songs for every TV show you can imagine. Yeah, wrestlers, politicians. You can find out more. Hot Dad, YouTube.com/DotFlist, but Hot Dad on Bandcamp and Patreon.com/Hot Dad.
We'll see you next week. I love everything.
shower, even when I plan to shave all my parts. Same clothes during holidays, during work days, even nights in the park. All intimate contact, fully clothed and salacious for you. Even when I use bathroom, no clothes can be adjusted or removed. I'm gonna wear them atop my flesh and bones. I'll never change.